I'm Mark Bayshore. Michigan's foster care system has had a troubled past, but it's been making some strides recently. There are fewer children waiting to be adopted, and the state's improved its training for caseworkers working in the foster care system. But while the state's doing a better job of keeping children safe, some say they aren't doing enough to keep families together. A recent investigation by the Lansing State Journal found that some parents face almost insurmountable obstacles in trying to get their kids back from Child Protective Services. Here to talk about why that matters is LSJ reporter Justin Hinckley. Welcome back.
Thank you. Good morning.
A lot of work you put in on this series, so
yes,
congratulations
many weeks.
On
Thank
that.
You.
Yes, it's a complicated, highly nuanced topic with a lot of data and information to try to digest, so well done.
Thank you.
You've covered the foster care system for a while now. How far has it come in the past decade, let's say?
Well, when they went back to court on their federal court monitoring, their most recent one includes an exit plan, and that they've improved enough that they're now planning to get out from under federal monitoring. So there's been, you know, vast improvements, like you mentioned, in training for foster care workers and protecting kids from repeat abuse when they're in foster care. But there's still some things that they have to work on.
What made you want to look into this issue of parental rights being terminated?
Yeah, so I wrote a story about a year ago on the anniversary of the Ricky Holland death, which was a local foster child who died, that was one of the cases that led to the federal court monitoring. And after that story ran, we got a lot of phone calls from parents who were concerned about how their kids were being treated, about how they were being treated. And as we started looking into this, we realized that the parent side of things, especially what happens to parents after they end up in court, was one of the areas of child welfare that was really sort of underreported and underinvestigated. And so we decided to dig in on that because it's another important piece of the whole process.
Well, what about the scale of this problem, though? How many parents are upset about this?
Boy, it'd be hard to quantify. There are about 8,500 court cases every year in Michigan dealing with CPS, and a couple thousand of those will involve petitions to terminate parental rights. I will tell you that over the last decade, there have been more than 5,600 appeals of terminations of parental rights. So it's a fraction of the overall cases that CPS investigates, but still a significant number of parents.
Describe the kind of concerns that would lead the state to terminate a parent's rights.
Well, there are the obvious ones, the ones that everybody thinks about, physical abuse, sexual abuse, things like that. But the majority of cases are dealing with neglect that covers a wide range of things from, not having enough food in the house to having a house like one family that I talked to that was exceptionally dirty to, basically failing to care for kids' physical or emotional needs. And those open up some gray areas where parent advocates say that the state's not doing a good enough job.
Yeah, even Colin Parks of CPS for Michigan acknowledges as you can imagine, I think it's easy to understand this, there's a great deal of nuance to these cases. Sometimes it's a slam dunk. You get a parent who's maybe got a serious drug problem or something, or there's physical abuse or something like that. But below that threshold, it can be very, very complicated situations. What kind of process precedes the decision to terminate parental rights?
So in the majority of cases, more than half, it's a matter of once you get into court, the court decides to take jurisdiction, then the judge will order what's called a service plan. And these are, could include things like therapy, drug testing, parenting coaching, things like that. And the parents have to comply with and show that they have benefited from these services. If they don't do that within a certain amount of time, then they can face the termination of parental rights.
Do parents have any kind of appeal process they can go through?
If their parental rights have been terminated, they can take that to the Court of Appeals.
Justin Hinckley's a state government reporter for the Lansing State Journal. We're talking about the obstacles that parents face in getting their kids back from Michigan's Child Protective Services. One of the goals of CPS is to keep families together whenever possible. But how do the experts say that needs to be balanced with the safety of the child?
Yeah, so the safety of the child is paramount. They are called the Children's Protective Service. And so everybody I talk to, that is the number one thing that they consider. Parent advocates, on the other hand, say that they don't do enough thinking about how that child can be safe in the home with their parents, with the right kinds of support for moms and dads.
You spoke to attorneys who said the system of Child Protective Services is really set up against the parents who are trying to get their kids back. How so exactly?
Well, it's a lower burden of proof. One of the things I was really surprised by in the investigation was this whole idea that these happen in civil cases. It's the state suing you to remove the kids from your home. And so it's a lower burden of proof that the prosecution has to make. And after the jurisdictional trial, there's no right to a jury, and so the prosecution only has to convince a judge that the evidence is clear and convincing that the kid needs to be, the parental rights need to be terminated. So right from the beginning, they have sort of this, you know, the prosecution has a smaller hill for them to climb. Mm. And then because the majority of these cases, they are dependent on the parents complying with and benefiting from these service plans, they have to, you know, jump through all of these hoops. They have to accomplish all of these milestones to be able to get their kids back. But they don't always get everything they need to do. Well, I'll say the system does not guarantee that they're going to get everything they need to do that.
I mentioned Colin Parks just a few minutes ago. There's a video on your website of Mr. Parks, who oversees CPS. And, I mean, he in his video, he gets into, he responds to the claims that they aren't doing enough to keep families together. Paraphrase where Mr. Parks is coming from and where CPS is coming from. How does the state respond to those allegations?
Well, they've certainly got a lot of, I mean, they have a family reunification program. They've been doing a lot of trying. They've got a pilot program in a few counties where they are taking money that would be spent on foster care, redirecting it to provide services to keep kids at home. And part of that federal court monitoring is, you know, making sure that they have a high reunification rate. And they have improved on that. So they, you know, they get in, they provide services. But one of the things that was really surprising to me, and that I think is kind of key, is that DHHS is the service provider and the opposing party in the courtroom. And a lot of the attorneys I talked to said, you know, that's one of the only places where the accused has to rely on their accuser to get out of trouble.
Yeah.
So parents have to be able to, you know, give up some concerns and fully trust the people that have brought them into court in the first place.
You also wrote about parents who are afraid to go and meet with the caseworkers because they worry that everything's going to be a strike against them. They're already in some kind of trouble with CPS, but they've got to. They're forced to try to navigate the system with CPS,
right,
but they're very gun-shy about proceeding.
That's right.
Now, these parents are entitled to public defendants in these cases, but you write that the representation that they're offered is not always up to par. Can you talk to us about that?
Well, I think that it's been, you know, pretty well documented the weaknesses in the public defender system on the criminal side. And they have all of the same issues on the civil side in CPS cases. Again, there are, you know, certainly there are attorneys who do their best despite of the low pay, but these attorneys are overworked, they're underpaid, and there's nothing to really incentivize that zealous advocacy that might make a difference for the parents in the courtroom.
In a really complicated, nuanced case, to use that word again here, Justin, how often is CPS in the position where they have to err on the side of caution? When they err on the side of caution, then the kids go to foster care, I would presume, most of the time.
Yes.
If their number one priority is the welfare of the child, and there's any doubt whatsoever, do you see you see decisions to send the kids to foster care? Is that safe to describe it that way?
So the CPS workers who I talked to said that you know, though the burden of proof statutorily is lower, that they work under the same premise that they have to, you know, they have to be beyond a reasonable doubt in their mind mm-hmm. that it's in the best interest of the child to remove it from the home. But these are judgment calls. These are judgment calls yeah. that they are making, and these are nuanced cases where the parent advocates say it's not always necessary.
It's a big, important issue. We want to thank our guest, Justin Hinckley from the Lansing State Journal. We've been talking about the obstacles parents face in getting their children back from Child Protective Services from the state. Justin, thanks for joining us
thank
today.
You.